Hey Slurper, whether you're talking about that crazy thing that happened at Craft Festival, the weird thing your dog did at the park, or the amazing dinner you whipped up from a virtually empty fridge, everyday stories hold the power to inspire and connect with your audience in a way that nothing else quite can. This won't be the first time you've heard this, I'm sure. We've been hearing marketers banging on about storytelling for a long time. But I've noticed that so many business owners are getting confused because no one really ever explains how to tell the stories that will help you sell more. I knew there had to be an easier way, so I've put together my own story formula to make it easy for you to be able to use stories in your social media, emails, and ultimately sell more. So I've put together a 90-minute workshop to teach you how, in a really simple way, you'll learn about the three types of stories you need to sell more, how to use those stories in your social media, blogs and emails, and I even guide you through how to start your very own story bank. Now, you can get access anytime to this workshop right now if you like. Just visit the link thevictoriabrown.com/pickandmix to start learning how you can use the power of storytelling in your business and never wonder what you should be talking about on social media again.
If you're feeling like the thought of doing your finances is doom and gloom, you need to build the belief that you can do it. Even if it seems difficult and scary, kind of reframing your mind in that, okay, it's scary now, but let me just bite off a tiny little bit and get one little task done.
That's Crystal McGilvery, chartered accountant and fine artist. She's passionate about helping people overcome the mindset blocks they have around managing their money and giving business owners the financial tools they need to survive and thrive. In this conversation, we talk about practical and simple ways business owners can make managing their finances easier and Crystal's experience of being diagnosed with both ADHD and dyslexia late in life. This is such a great listen if you ever struggle with money in life or business. And Crystal is living proof you can be both good at finances and art. Enjoy. Welcome to Creative Slurp Podcast, giving you the juice to build a successful creative business with me, Victoria Brown, a creative business advisor, former jeweler and craft fanatic. Now you're in the right place if you want to find real talk, inspiration and the best tips and strategies for your handmade business without the overwhelm. We're all about making business exciting and fun. Now buckle up and let's get started. Hi, Crystal. Thank you so much for coming on Creative Slurp Podcast. I'm really excited about today's podcast interview because I know how important money is to everybody, especially business owners and especially creative people who tend to shy away from talking about money. So I'm really excited to be talking to you today. For everybody listening, can you please tell us a little bit about you, your business and your mission?
Yes, and thank you for having me. I'm really excited. So yes, Crystal McGilvery. Professionally, I am a chartered accountant. I did that for over 10 years and that was great. Now I specialize in behavioral finance and that takes me to support individuals and founders with their financial decision making. And that is my mission. My mission is to empower people, give people the skills, the confidence and the self-efficacy to make better decisions. My expertise can be, you know, applied to, say, healthcare and retail. But I am passionate about finance because it impacts people in their day-to-day lives so significantly.
Why do you think talking about money and educating people about money is so important?
Number one, we don't do it. I mean, if we think about the world of money, money itself is a humanly created construct. We weren't, you know, as human beings, money is not part of us, but we have to use money given the society we live in and to be able to survive and thrive. So it seems crazy to not talk about money and share information about money and teach people about all the products and services and how to use them and, you know, be as efficient as possible.
Why do you think that there is such a almost a stigma around talking about money?
I think one of the main reasons is we are social human beings. We want to fit in with our peers. We want to be socially accepted. You know, we buy things, we go on certain holidays just to kind of signal to the to our peers, this is where we are. So if we just look at that aspect alone, money helps you do that. So that makes it kind of sticky and all mixed together in, you know, okay, I need money. I need to be good at money to be able to signal to other people that I am wealthy or I am good or I'm, you know, deserving of your attention, etc. So I think in all of that is where it spits out, okay, people are uncomfortable when it comes to talking about money.
And I think bound up in that as well is almost like people, sometimes money gets a bad rep, I think. So everybody wants money, but everyone thinks money's evil. That's my experience. And so how does someone go about kind of, you know, obviously we all need money to survive in this modern world. How do people go about kind of reconciling the two, those two beliefs in their mind, I guess?
You have different types of people, right? You have some people who do think money is the worst thing ever. And that usually goes back to some kind of childhood related experience, whether money was really, there wasn't much of it at home, et cetera, et cetera. Everyone's got their own personal story when it comes to money. And that totally feeds through to your life and your day-to-day actions and decisions. Also, there are, and I, obviously I can talk for hours for this, but there are also environmental cues and experiences, even down to the year you were born. And this isn't about anything kind of Chinese calendar or anything like that, but even thinking about the state of the economy when you were growing up and the experience you had. So, you know, even looking at interest rates right now, and they're going up, there are people who are much older and they see the interest rates are still very low. So all of that plays into how you feel about the economy and finance and business opportunities and what you can do and how empowered and capable you feel about winning at money, basically. And I think, you know, to the second part of the question as to how to go about improving that possible negative relationship with money, my work and the way I get people to transform is by starting with you and how you feel. And it sounds very simple, but for many people it's very uncomfortable and difficult, and we haven't actually done that. It's not an everyday thing that we sit there and reflect and pay attention to our decisions and pay attention to how we feel about these money things. But that, I think, is the starting point.
It's so interesting because I definitely have a disposition to burying head in the sand about money. It's just I don't know where it came from and whether it's always been there, but I definitely, if I didn't have to have any money in my life, I'd be really happy. but I do recognize at the same time that money is something that gives you opportunities. It helps you promote those causes that you want to want to help. So I'm trying to reconcile the two, but I definitely have that. And I wonder whether it was something growing. I don't know. I don't think I used to have it until I was in my, I only really became aware about my early mid-20s, I think. So I don't know. But how about you? So if we get personal, how about your childhood? So how was money growing up for you, and how did that influence what you're doing now, you know, making conversations about money?
Yeah, interesting. So I was raised in a single parent home, social housing. So we didn't have much money. So money wasn't easily available. It was kind of mum did her best, got by. But I think what she also did is hid her difficulty. So it wasn't normal for us to show the outside world that we had financial troubles. And that stuck with me, almost the embarrassment of money issues. And that kept, like you just said, money being taboo, because it was mum quite nicely or quite clearly attached kind of social cues and our status to our pocket, basically. And that stuck with me for many years.
Do you think there's enough education in schools around how to manage money and like just bring it out into the open, I guess?
Not at all. I mean, there are lots of companies and charities that are doing work now, especially for children, but not enough. No, not at all. I mean, it's not compulsory in the education system. There are some schools that do include it, but the majority in the schooling system are external organizations bringing in and providing that service for them, which is a great start, but so much more needs to be done, especially on the side of financial decision-making, understanding yourself and your behaviors and your actions. That is not commonly in the financial education space. It's more about, this is what a credit card is. This is how you use it. But actually that doesn't actually mean anything if the person is not in the right space and place to make those decisions, which is where the majority of my work is focused.
And also, I don't feel that you have enough education about how to balance money, how to manage it on a day-to-day. So I think people feel they've got no control over it almost, and therefore they shy away from it because they just don't know how to do or what to do with it.
Yeah, totally. And I think even down to, you know, a quick example, looking at pensions and what they were back in the day, you know, that was done, sorted by your employer. You don't have to think about it. But now there are so many options. Sometimes even me, when I read it, I'm like, what are you saying? There are so many different options as to what you can do, and so many different products and solutions, and the responsibility is on the individual to choose the right thing. And I think that's really unfair. And that's only, you know, I'm not into scaremongery at all, but it is only getting worse. In a good and bad way, you've got innovation and new products that are trying to help, but it is more things for people to make choices about. And if you haven't been given the tools about how to best make those choices, then yeah, it's difficult.
Yeah, it sounds like we're all doomed. <at the
moment. laughs> I don't think so. I'm here to change the world.
Good. That's really good. A lot of people who listen to this podcast are business owners and they've got very small businesses. They wear all the hats. They do everything themselves. And I think especially for creative business owners, I think wearing that financial hat is probably one of the trickiest because it's something they're not familiar with. If someone's just starting out in business now, what things should they have in place as business owners as regards to money?
For sure, no matter what type of business you are, and I'm sure this has been said many times, but have a separate bank account. That is like the biggest thing that it makes it so much easier. Even if you don't track your finances on a monthly, weekly basis, the fact that your business finances are separate is like half the work. You can then give it to an accountant and it'll be so much easier for them to just get that sorted. Following that, of course, tracking. So if you are a small business or you're just starting, you need to know how you're performing. You need to have sight of, okay, you know, your cash flow. Is next month going to be a bit of a dip? Do I need to supplement my bank balance, my business bank balance, with some personal income and, you know, some personal savings? So tracking and being aware of your cash position, I think, is also key. And notice I haven't even mentioned profit. That, I say, is after cash flow. Even if you are a profitable business, if you haven't got the cash to pay your suppliers or whatever you need to keep the business afloat, it doesn't matter that you're profitable. Remember, profit does not tell you when you're getting paid. It purely tells you that your costs are less than your income, which is great. But clients, you know, you might have agreements where you're paying them. They're paying you months later.
When you talk about cash flow, do you mean that someone should be aware of all the complicated calculations around cash flow projection and all that? Or is it just really a knowing of what you've got going in and coming out? How far do people have to take it? Because I think people get quite overwhelmed when they have to have all these different types of spreadsheets and different types of calculations going on, and then they end up doing nothing.
Yeah, of course. Definitely. No, even I don't like it. My brain, I've got ADHD and dyslexia. And I'm like, let's keep it simple. My phrase is, I don't like there being too many drawers. So I'm all about keeping it simple. So no, totally. I do use a spreadsheet, but it's all pre-populated, pre-calculated. Mm-hmm. So all you do is just pop in your income amounts and your outgoing amounts. There's no calculations for you to do because it's already built in. And those kind of tools make it so much easier to manage and see, okay, oh, look, in month three, it's a negative. Oh, let's make that change, and just managing it that way.
And do you think, how feasible is it? I mean, I'm talking about very small businesses. Mm-hmm. Is it necessary that they have an accountant, or are they able to do these things themselves, I guess?
It's a good question. And if you speak to an accountant who does the accounts, they'd say yes. But I think the question here is, how do you feel about doing your finances? And if you're not confident at all, it is in your own and your business's interest for you to, you know, give that to somebody else to do, because you need your business finances to be managed correctly, as efficiently, and also as you grow your business, an accountant will be able to identify ways you can increase your profits. So in the early days, if you can and you're comfortable, definitely, completely, you can do it yourself. But as you grow, and if you are feeling like you're struggling with managing it yourself, then pass it on to an accountant.
And do you have any tips for choosing accountants? And I say this because I've met few accountants, and some of them are really relatable and explain things really simply. Another one, I didn't have a blooming clue what they were talking about, and I was too scared to ask because I felt like I should know. So how is the best way to choose an accountant?
It's a really good question, and I get it on every talk that I do, and I think it's an important question. Traditionally, accountants aren't educators, and they aren't there to give you the tools to do it yourself. They are there to be compliant, ensure you're compliant, file, you know, returns, and they do that, and most of them do that very well. So initially you want to keep that in mind, but there are other accountants who do offer the extra service of holding your hand through the process. So again, it depends on what you need, and usually with that there may be a cost associated to that extra service. You know, maybe monthly management accounts where they talk you through the performance and explain everything. So it's worth checking what they offer, what services they offer. And I also say it's important to make sure you have a connection with your accountant, because when things do get difficult or you don't understand, like you just said, you need to feel comfortable to be able to say, hey, I don't get this, and not feel embarrassed, because the end result is you will just suffer and your business will suffer. And then also, if you can, a referral is best. If you can hear from somebody else who's used them and they vouch for them. There was a period, I think last year, about a month, where I heard of about 6 different accountants who were being investigated by the HMRC for doing fraudulent work. And it's shocking. So if you can get a referral, do.
Yeah, great advice. So coming back to how the mind works around money, and there's limiting beliefs you have, how best to go about tackling them? Because I feel that most of the time people don't even know they're there. People don't realize that they've got all these limiting beliefs. How do they find them and then tackle them?
That's a really good point. You're right, actually. People don't realize. And it comes to the surface when people start to look at the life they want to have, the things they want to do, and then compare that with what they're actually doing. So usually our limiting beliefs is what stop us from doing and living the life that we want to live. You know, even down to pricing, you might want to have a business that's generating 500K per year or whatever it may be, but you're not charging enough to be able to generate that revenue. That's because you possibly have a limiting belief about your ability and your self-worth of charging so much. You may be comparing your income to what you was earning when you were employed, for example. And we know obviously the income is completely different, and that's why people go into business. So I think the first step is definitely looking at the life you want, the business you want, and comparing it to what you have and what you're doing and your decisions in that, in getting you to have the business that you have right now. And I always say as well, be gentle with yourself. We are human beings. Like I said before, we're not built to have and be amazing at money. We're emotional beings, and being efficient and good at money means not being emotional. And you know, it's two opposing things. Like, it's hard to have them exist at the same time. But the process to get you close to that is to be objective and be self-aware, and carve out time in your week or your month where you can be really objective and, okay, what is my business doing? What is it not doing? Where have I possibly made a mistake? What needs a bit of sharpening, and taking that time to look at yourself and reflect?
Do you think that it's important then for someone to say, I'm going to set aside this time and on Monday morning or Friday or whenever works for you, and really stick to it? Because I sometimes find it very hard to stick to that kind of routine, I've got to be honest. Is that really important that people do that?
100%. And yes, it's really hard. And it's really hard because most of us rely on us being motivated and emotionally in the right space to do these good things. But again, being successful at business and money and finance is not relying on emotion. So this is where, you know, building good habits come into place. So, you know, we could have another separate conversation about how to get you to do that Monday morning business audit or whatever it may be at the same time, you know, as a set, this is what I do. And actually, I don't even think about it now. It's just automatic. But that is key. And that is where you see all these amazing people doing so well, because they've built in discipline into their lives, and they are, you know, they've got those routines so they can do what they need to do to win.
Do you think that people who have had jobs and been employed find this transition a bit harder because they've had everything done for them, and almost like they're in this employee mindset that everything is kind of taken care of, and it's really hard to kind of sometimes self-motivate yourself about these things you don't want to do?
That's a really good question. I don't think I can say yes or no. I think it depends, because some people go into business because they've had such a terrible experience working 9 to 5. And that is the motivation. That gives them the drive that when things are looking difficult, or when they have a great win, or you know, they bag a really big client or whatever, that, you know, adds to it. So that 9 to 5 life could be the motivation as to why you go self-employed.
Yeah.
But then also, yeah, you're right. There are people who've never been employed. And I've worked with some people who've been self-employed or had their own business from 16. But then even those people have their own challenges, because, you know, they would have generated a certain level of income, and that's comfortable. And that allows them to pay their bills, eat, maybe go on a holiday once every couple of years, and they're surviving. But then pushing it to the next level, they've got limitations there as well.
So this kind of money awareness problem amongst business owners, and kind of education, I guess, around business owners. If you were to talk to the business minister, for example, and have a conversation with them today, what would you like to see happen? What would you like them to change in the UK, at least?
I've never had this question before. Really good question. I'd have to answer it in line with the work that I do and where I can see the work that I do and the transformation it has on people in business. And it comes back to the emotional side and understanding yourself and what's required to excel at business. So it would be training and education around that, so people have the tools to excel financially. Because like you said, you know, not everyone can afford an accountant straight away. And actually an accountant is not the solution to what we're talking about here. We're talking about, you know, self-awareness, self-efficacy, confidence, you know, pushing boundaries and all that good stuff to win financially.
Because very often I think the numbers bit, I mean, it can be massively complicated, of course, numbers and accountancy can, but at a very basic level, what we need as business owners actually isn't that complicated,
but
we just make it more complicated in our heads somehow than it actually needs to be.
And like you said, like at the beginning of this podcast, we spoke about personal finance and the taboo. Business finance and personal finance and how you feel about it is one and the same. And that's why I support people with both, because it doesn't matter. It starts with you. As much as you have a business, it's you that has the business and you are the decision maker. So everything the business does and the success of the business comes down to you and how you feel about money. So that's why it is all muddled up and crazy, because actually there's maybe something going on with you that we need to work through so you can go and be a badass.
Yeah, it's a big responsibility though, isn't it? Because when you have a job, no matter how much you hate it, you have that paycheck coming in all the time.
Yeah.
On a business, you have to be pushing all the time, and even then you can't guarantee there's going to be a steady income coming. And I think that there is definitely a fear, you know, what if I don't get money in next month or the month after, what happens next? And if you're not careful, you can really get yourself carried away from that and end up on some kind of downward spiral, I think.
You can. And you know, a lot of the successes I see is where people have partnered or joined masterminds or groups, or they work with other people that give them insight into creative and diverse ways that they can generate income. So it's not so reliant on them, the individual, plowing through, you know, using their whole body to get money. And actually you're structuring your business in a way that actually you've got recurring income without you even working your socks off to get that. And having that variety within your business, I think, is definitely the answer.
That's a really good tip, I think. Yeah, because I think you can feel very alone.
Yeah.
As an entrepreneur and as a business owner.
Totally.
And I was just thinking in particular, I mean, I didn't go to art school, but I know that I've spoken to a lot of creative people who've been to art school or design college. And a lot of people say to me, we don't get any kind of practical business education when we're artists. We learn how to create the art, but we don't learn how to create that into a business. Is that something that you've come across at all?
Yeah, I think possibly the majority of my clients are creative business owners, actually. And I think, you know, trying to reflect on why that is, and I think that comes down to how I approach the space of financial education and financial decision making. And it's a gentle approach. There are many other finance educators, and I'm sure some people listening have come across them, who are quite harsh. You know, you've bought another pair of trainers and they kind of make you feel really terrible. And actually, you're human, okay, there's nothing wrong with that, you know. Or you bought a coffee from Starbucks, all right, sure. So I think, yeah, no, they're not given the tools. And also I had a client who was a personal trainer, and he got himself in so much trouble with HMRC because the training program that he went on, which taught him how to build a PT business, did not teach him anything about finance. And it's just ridiculous. So all, you know, all business types need to learn how to build and manage a business. It's crucial.
Yeah, it's so important. I think that definitely more should be done about that. I mean, I haven't experienced it, so I couldn't say, and I don't know what's happening now, but I do, from what I've heard, I do think it needs to improve. So if you could think of any top tips, I guess, for business owners who are either just starting out or in a bit of a muddle about their money, I guess, what would you say that they need to do? I mean, we've talked about power of community, we've talked about having a routine. What would you be your top tips?
I think if any of the creatives are anything like me, when I create my artwork, I'm definitely in a space of feeling, right? And the work I create comes from that place. So if you are the same and the work you do and the things you do, you have to feel good or you want to feel good. And obviously, when you think about finance, it's, you know, big X, you don't want to, because in your thinking is that it won't feel good. Make it exciting. That's your responsibility, to make finance exciting. And it totally can be. And I say this, you know, not being a weird accountant, I say this purely from experience. Like I said, most of my clients are creatives, and they literally say, I've quoted it on a website because I was like, yes, you know, I find finance fun. Like, what the hell? But you can. And I think, you know, there's so many ways you can do that, whether you partner with somebody and you make a finance day a fun day. You know, I would say have a glass of wine, but it might mess up your finances. Do something fun with it. Reward yourself, you know, immediately afterwards and get it done. I think that is definitely a game changer. Yeah. And like we spoke about routines. And also, if you're feeling like the thought of doing your finances is doom and gloom, you need to build the belief that you can do it. Even if it seems difficult and scary, kind of reframing your mind in that, okay, it's scary now, but let me just bite off a tiny little bit and get one little task done. You know, that might be downloading your bank transactions on Excel. Make that the task, and that's it. You don't even look at them, but break it down into really small things so you can feel a success from working your way slowly through your finances.
I think that's a brilliant tip. I think the making it funny is such a good tip, because that's exactly it, isn't it? Yeah. It's boring. I mean, most people find it boring, but it's perspective. Like you say, it's, if you make it fun, then it becomes fun. And why can't it be fun if you can't? I don't know, you could have a totalizer to say that when you get to a certain amount of, you know, you've made so much profit or whatever, you can treat yourself to something. Exactly. And then you have to do your accounts to know that.
So. It not being fun and us rejecting it makes complete sense. We don't want to do things that aren't fun and stimulating and exciting, exactly, or boring or scary or difficult. Our brain rejects that. So it's just flipping that on its head and let's make this amazing.
Yeah, brilliant. And you talked about the fact that you were diagnosed with ADHD and dyslexia. Do you think that has helped you see that it needs to be made fun for the people?
Yes, totally. And it's funny, because before I was diagnosed, I had no suspicion of it whatsoever. But I realized that a lot of my clients were coming forward and saying that they had dyslexia or ADHD or autism, and they get, you know, they kind of on the call, they'd apologize. And it's like, okay, like in my head, I'm like, whatever, it, you know, we're dealing with you and how you work. And I think, yeah, definitely with me, you know, working in the finance profession, and I noticed this, although I didn't suspect anything. And I think that's more of a reflection of the background I came from, you know, in Black families, it's, you know, the community, depression and that kind of stuff doesn't exist. You know, they totally ignore it. Mm-hmm. But when I was working in finance, I realized quite quickly as I was getting qualified that when people were speaking about financial concepts, I didn't know what they were talking about, though I was qualified. And I'd be like, are you talking about this? And I'd explain it in my way. And they'll be like, yeah. I'm like, oh, I get it. But what I've done is changed the way I understood it into a way that made sense for me and was much simpler. So I think that totally translated into how I now teach and support others with finance. I've translated the complicated, horrible jargon into some kind of simple way that actually, oh, I get it.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I'm almost a little bit, and it might be my conception of what ADHD is, but I'm almost a little bit surprised that you went into accountancy given that you had ADHD in the first place.
Wow. And someone else said the same thing who also has ADHD. And she's like, how are you good at finance and you've got ADHD? She's like, I don't understand you. I read a really interesting paper talking about, anyone who has ADHD, I'm sure, would understand and resonate. But those with ADHD excel at things that they are emotionally motivated to do. So they tend to go into a state of flow and, you know, they're just totally focused on getting that done because of an emotional drive. Now, my mother told me to do finance and accounting. And given that I was from a single parent home and I was the responsible eldest child who made sure there was lots of, the house was in a good condition and everything was neat and tidy, I was the big sister who made sure of that. So I made sure to not bring home any trouble. So if mum told me to go into accounts, I know that's going to satisfy her. So I had an emotional drive to go into finance. And I think that's what happened with me. So finance became an emotional motivation for me to succeed in it. And then I just carried it through. That's what I think.
And when you were diagnosed, because I know there's so many people being diagnosed quite late on that. Did that help you? Were you glad that you got that diagnosis?
Yeah, it did. It was really empowering. I mean, I know some people are diagnosed with dyslexia and ADHD and it's not a positive experience. And obviously everyone's experiences are completely different and how it shows up in their lives. But for me, I guess because I was so much later in life and because I was raised in a way that there's no excuse, you just have to find a way and get it done, you know, really quite blunt. But actually with the diagnosis and doing my research and understanding it, looking back and reflecting on my life and the way I do things, I'm like, oh, that's why. And that, it's like, great. Okay. Amazing. So if anything, it's empowering. And I just can now tailor even more what I do and how to do it to capitalize on how I work.
And completely changing the subject a little bit. You're also a fine artist, which I find fascinating. And I just wonder, you talk about on your website about your art being an escape. Do you think that was because you had this ADHD that was not diagnosed and you needed some way of expressing yourself?
Ooh, you and your questions. That's a really good point, actually, because with what I said about, you know, being the responsible person at home and having to get things done, there wasn't any room for me to be this free person. So yeah, I think you're right, because I was drawing from I was very young, I think primary or secondary school, when the teachers started to see, oh, you've got something. So yeah.
What inspires your artwork?
I like capturing people. I almost, how do I describe this with words? That's the hardest. I don't even know how to actually explain it. I've never been asked that question, but there is, when I'm drawing someone, I have to kind of study the person in several photographs, if it's a commission, for example, but I have to feel something with the picture or the way they've presented themselves, and I try to pull that out in the picture. But in terms of when I actually create my art, I'm definitely in an emotional state, some kind of emotional high or emotional low, and then I can channel and draw for, say, 10 hours.
That's so interesting, because you almost like you need that emotional state and doing your art to get you in that emotional state, but then you also need then the discipline when you do your actual finance work. I'm guessing it's quite different.
And it's funny, because I was just listening to, I think it was it Adam, is it Adam Grant? What, I forget his name. Atomic Habits. Yeah, time blocking completely. So my brain, I have to tell myself when I'm going to be doing logical work and when I'm going to be doing creative work, and I can't switch between the two.
James Clear.
That's the one. I completely got Adam.
I had to look it up.
Yeah, James Clear.
Sorry, James.
But yeah, no, I totally have to prime my brain as to what I'm going to be doing. So it's a completely different crystal when I'm in that creative space to when I'm in the serious business.
See, that's interesting. So for any creative business owners out there saying, I can't do it, I'm too creative.
Yeah.
You're the living proof that it can be done.
You can, you totally can. And I've seen people transform before my eyes. Like, it's fun.
So if someone came to you and said they wanted help, how would you go about helping them?
Normally, I'd jump on a call. Free call, we'd have a chat. It's always, I like to understand kind of where you are, what you think is blocking you. And we even do a little bit of chat about, you know, where you want to get to, what's happened before. And then we build out a plan of how best to work together. Some people just want, you know, a one-off startup session, which I offer, and I take them through everything they need to do on the finance and accounting side, just to logistically get things set up. But then other people definitely want mentoring and me taking them on the process for several months.
Fantastic. So where can people find you if they want to get in touch with you?
They can find me on kristamcgilvery.com, or We Are Mind Over Money. It's also my business website.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you so much, Crystal, and I wish you all the best, and thank you so much for giving your expertise and advice freely.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Thank you so much for listening to Creative Slurp. I hope it's inspired you to try something new in your business. If you loved it, please take the time to leave a review on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. See you soon, and go and chase your biggest creative business dreams. You can do it.